All right, so I assume you guys can hear me now okay. I haven't even been able to get into Pal Talk at all. I've been trying for an hour and I can't get into Pal Talk, so I'm in Pal Talk Express. And I don't usually work in Pal Talk Express, so what I'm not certain about is if I can post links for you guys. So what I want to do right now, I'm posting a link in the room. And I want to find out, did you guys get that link? Nope, it says only the room owner can post the link. All right. So I'm not going to be able to give you the links tonight like I usually do. Oh, Cheryl says she'll post the link. Thank you, Cheryl. We're going to be starting tonight, Cheryl, with number 454, which is under step two. Of course, the website is RDA7, that is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And then under step two, 454. And that's where I'm going to begin tonight. Why don't we start just with a moment of silence, and then we'll jump in. All right. So just a moment of quiet. Amen. And someone's asking, is this a recording? Nope, it's not. It's not a recording. I'm on the phone. All right, so tonight we are looking at the seven steps to awakening, and the number is 454. 454 under step two. Yeah. And what I'm going to do is start by, of course, reading from the seven steps to awakening. On page 81, quote 454, which originally comes from the Supreme Yoga, which is Yoga Vasistha. And this is what the quote says. The notion of the reality of the objects of this world arises only in ignorance. The notion of the reality of the objects of this world arises only in ignorance. And Cheryl has given you a link to number 454. That is to my journal. That is to what I wrote after contemplating the quote that I've just read to you. So let's go ahead and look at number 454. Only through the idea I am this, can one see I am not that? You know, this actually reminds me of an experience that I shared with you guys. I think maybe it was last Sunday night. I don't remember when I shared the experience with you. It wasn't too long ago. And it was the experience of when I was laying in my backyard under the tree after doing some yard work, just resting. And there was a temporary experience of, you know, it's funny because it gets very hard to describe, because what I want to say in a way is it was a temporary experience of experiencing myself as everything that was within my range of perception. So, you know, I was the tree, I was the leaves, I was the wind. But the funny thing is, describing it that way is not entirely true, because there really wasn't a thought of I. So there wasn't a thought like, I am the leaves and I am the wind and I am the tree. What was really happening in that experience, I think, was that the idea, I am this, was absent. It was non-existent. And because there was no idea, I am this, there also could not be an idea, I'm not that. You know, so there couldn't be the experience of, I'm this body, Regina, laying under the tree, but I'm not that tree, I'm not those leaves, I'm not the wind. So because I am this was absent, I am not that was also absent. And in that way, I was everything. But again, to describe it as I was everything almost implies that there was an I, and there wasn't. That's the funny thing about the experience. And so, you know, when contemplating, the notion of the reality of the objects of this world arises only in ignorance. The ignorance, of course, would be the idea, I am this. And because of an idea, I am this, then there naturally is also an idea of, I am not that. I am not that other person. I am not that microphone. I am not that computer. I am not that tree. I am not the wind, right? What we can do is, if you are in the link which Cheryl gave you at 4:54, if you just look underneath the comment and reply area, you'll see a 4:55. And you can just click on 4:55 to go to the next journal entry. Before I read that journal entry, I'm going to read what's in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Again, this is still coming from the Supreme Yoga. Confusion or delusion is unreal, and the unreal does not exist. Which is, those are the kind of statements that aren't necessarily helpful to some people some of the time. Oh, and hi, Mary Beth. I see you made it in. I'm actually not in, even though I appear to be here. I couldn't get into Pal Talk. So you made it in and I didn't. You know, those kinds of statements are not necessarily helpful to people all the time. To say confusion or delusion is unreal and the unreal does not exist, that's not necessarily helpful to someone when they're feeling in that moment confused, or they're suffering in that moment from some kind of fear or some kind of guilt or some kind of anxiety. To just walk up to someone and say, but you know, your confusion or your delusion is unreal and doesn't exist, is not necessarily helpful. But at the same time, these kinds of thoughts are very helpful to contemplate in an open contemplation when we're in a state of all is well. And so why don't we look at what came to me when I contemplated this quote from A State of All Is Well. So looking at the journal now, number 455. Are there two selves? One with clarity of seeing, that is pure wisdom, and one who must sit in this chair and listen. Can there be two selves? And this is actually an inquiry that rose up out of the contemplation. Again, if you look at the quote says, confusion or delusion is unreal. Well, if you look at what is written in the journal, the inquiry that has arisen, can there be two selves? When I sit in that chair over there and I am contemplating the seven steps, trying to figure out again the best way to say this, but everyone who has this experience knows what I'm talking about. I contemplate the quote from the seven steps, and then something arises. It might be some kind of a thought, like the one we just saw in 4:54, or it might be an inquiry, like the one we're looking at now in 4:55. It arises. And then if it's an inquiry that arises, what I also experience is the answer to the inquiry arises. I don't have to think about it and come up with an answer. First the question arises, and then the answer arises. And my experience when these things arise is that I have that wisdom. I don't have the experience of an other, like an inner teacher, which is the type of experience I used to have. I don't have the experience of an other teaching me these things. This wisdom is just arising in me. So if this wisdom is in me to arise, then can it be true that I am actually the ignorant one? You know, the one who suffers confusion or delusion. Can I actually be ignorant and this wisdom also? That's what this question is asking. Are there two selves? One with clarity of seeing that is pure wisdom, and one who must sit in this chair and listen. Can there be two selves? And of course, the answer is no, there cannot be two. And then the next question, can ignorance be real if wisdom shines forth? So if I can sit in my contemplation, and I think some of you know, some of you are aware of the wisdom that comes up. Some of you have seen the evidence of that wisdom that comes up in me. You know, and we've seen it in many forms. We've seen it in NTI and in a Ramana and this Seven Steps journal, you know, when I teach. You know, we all witness this wisdom. Well, if we have to pick which is real, the ignorance or the wisdom, let's ask it this way. Could ignorance have wisdom? Or is it more likely that wisdom sometimes is just forgotten and there's an appearance of ignorance, but it's not true ignorance? You know, ignorance can't have wisdom. If ignorance is the reality, then there is no wisdom. However, if wisdom is the reality, but then sometimes wisdom is just temporarily forgotten, or it's not tapped into, or it's not looked at, or it's not listened to, then there can be an appearance of ignorance. But it's not real ignorance because the wisdom is still present. It's just not being accessed in this moment. So when it asks this question, can ignorance be real if wisdom shines forth? The answer is no. If there is wisdom, then ignorance cannot be real. So that means that any of us who experience clarity while teaching in Pal Talk, or experience clarity while contemplating whatever it is that we contemplate, because we experience that clarity, that is evidence of the wisdom. And if there's any evidence of wisdom at all, then ignorance has to be a facade. It cannot be true. And when you have that clarity, if you look back at this quote, 455, confusion or delusion is unreal and the unreal does not exist, then there's an understanding of that quote, that ignorance is merely not paying attention to wisdom. But there is no state in which there is no wisdom. Therefore, ignorance is unreal. There's no such thing as ignorance. It's just a facade. So tell you what, if you are in 455 with me, what you can do, and again, underneath the comment and reply area, is click on number 456. And I will read first 456 from the Seven Steps to Awakening, which is quoting the Supreme Yoga. Yeah, Jay has written in the room, so to say you're in a state of ignorance is a false statement, I guess. What we could say maybe is right now I seem to be experiencing ignorance. It's like a temporary experience I'm having, you know, but it's not a true statement about us at all. Yeah, does that make sense? Good. All right, so reading 456 from the Supreme Yoga. In their mind, my body seems to be real. But to my illumined intelligence, their physical existence is unreal, as it is to a sleeping person. Now, this is a very interesting one. I think I mentioned this again, you know, within the last week or two, that there was a thread on the Open Minds Facebook group that I saw, a very long thread, and one comment in that thread really stood out to me. And that was a comment where someone was saying something like, as long as you're in a body, I'm not going to see you as enlightened. And I remember I laughed at the comment within myself. I didn't add anything to the thread. I didn't say anything. But I knew that the person who was writing that was completely mistaken. However, it's not necessarily an uncommon mistake. It's certainly the type of statement I've heard thrown around in the Course community many times. So it's even somewhat common, or at least it has been in the past. The idea that if you are in a body, you are not enlightened. The truth of the matter is, at least based on what these masters are saying, if we trust these masters, it's not if I see you in a body, you're not enlightened. It's if I see you in a body, I'm not enlightened. We have to ask, who is the one seeing the body? If I see you in a body, I am not enlightened. Let's listen to what the Supreme Yoga says again. In their mind, my body seems to be real, but to my illumined intelligence, their physical existence is unreal. Right? So, as long as I see you in a body, that means I am not enlightened. That doesn't say anything about your state of mind. So for us to judge someone as, you know, not enlightened just because we perceive them in a body is a complete mistake. And especially if we are judging them so completely that we are possibly disregarding any wisdom that they're sharing, well, then we're the ones that are suffering from that mistake. I personally think it's most helpful not to have any concern at all for who is or who is not enlightened. I think that wisdom comes from many people who are not enlightened, but are in that state where wisdom is currently coming through, because we all have wisdom. Remember, ignorance is the illusion. Wisdom is the reality. That is the reality for all of us. So no one has to be enlightened in order to be speaking wisdom that might be helpful to me or reasonable for me to listen to. So for me to go around judging people as enlightened or unenlightened is a mistake. The better question is what I'm hearing right now, is that confirming within me that as wisdom, or is that not confirming in me right now as wisdom? And if it is confirming in me right now as wisdom, then I listen to it. It doesn't even matter if I saw you, you know, completely drunk and bad-talking everyone last night. If right now you are speaking wisdom, that wisdom is your reality. Any ignorance that may have shown up, that was the illusion. So when you speak wisdom, I listen. When you speak from ignorance or act from ignorance, I recognize that is not your truth. And yeah, this is what the Course means by asking us to see only the Christ in our brother, right? So we would look beyond anything that is not true. And as we've seen tonight, ignorance is not true. We look beyond that to the wisdom, which is the only truth about everyone. And if you learn to look beyond ignorance to the wisdom that is the only truth about everyone, you may soon find yourself saying, everyone is enlightened. Everyone is enlightened, because then you're focusing on that wisdom only. Okay, so we haven't even looked at the journal yet, so let's go look at the journal. Number 456 says, my seeing shows my believing. This is a fact I do well to silently remember. If I see bodies, I am seen through the belief I am this. If I see differences, I am seen through the belief I am this. Each body seen and each difference noticed is a gift. It is an opportunity to once again note my willingness to abandon the position of local, to abandon the position of local being as what I am, and know myself as non-local, non-specific omnipresence. So as we saw earlier tonight, when I have the thought I am this, which is often called the I thought, when we have the thought I am this in the mind, then what I also see are objects or persons that I am not. If I am this, then I see I am not. That's just the way it goes. So again, if I am seeing people that I really think of as others, that means I still believe I am this. That's what that means. It's not any statement at all about the people. It's a statement about me. It's a statement about my seeing. It's a statement about my believing. And I do best to gently remember that. And what I mean by gently remember that is that I was speaking to someone earlier in the week, and we uncovered a belief in this person. The belief goes somewhat like this: if I'm not enlightened, I'm bad. You know, there's something wrong with me as long as I'm not enlightened. There's something wrong with me as long as I see others. And I don't think that's necessarily an uncommon belief. And in fact, I think it is that kind of a belief at all, that kind of a belief that is at the foundation maybe of sometimes when we want very, very much to become enlightened. We want to become enlightened because somehow I'm not good enough unless I am enlightened. And then when our focus becomes to become enlightened because I'm not good enough if I'm not enlightened, that's when this experience of false enlightenment seems to come in. And again, it's coming in from the ego, out of an ego desire. You know, it's our desire being answered, and it's just a type of denial. So when I say gently remember that as long as I see others, I still believe I am this, what I mean by that is notice it, but do not judge myself. Do not judge myself as bad because I still see others. Do not judge myself as bad because I still believe I am this. But notice it, because noticing is self-honesty. And I don't know how anyone can awaken without self-honesty. Gentle, loving self-honesty. As long as you are honest that I still see others, I still believe I am this, then you know where you are, and you know what types of things your contemplation needs to be focused on. You're helpful to yourself in self-honesty. In denial and false enlightenment, it's just a delay. So again, 456 in the journal says, my seeing shows my believing. This is a fact I do well to silently remember. If I see bodies, I am seeing through the belief I am this. If I see differences, I am seeing through the belief I am this. Each body seen and each difference noticed is a gift. Notice how the word gift is used. So, you know, that kind of an idea is to really take away any thought of judging myself for seeing others, for believing I am this. Instead, every time I notice that that's true, I notice that I'm seeing other bodies, I notice I'm seeing differences, I realize, this sight is a gift. It is an opportunity to once again note my willingness to abandon the position of local being, or that would be to abandon the belief in separation, or to abandon the I thought as what I am, and know myself as non-local, non-specific omnipresence, which would be like the experience under the tree that I mentioned earlier. Now, if you're in 456 with me, you can go underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 457. Let's see, Mary Beth wrote, I love seeing Mary Beth in the room, first of all. Wanting to become enlightened is a pointer to wanting to be the creator I so desire to recognize as God created me to be. What makes me want it? Well, the interesting thing about the desire to be enlightened is that when we talk about the word enlightened, you know, that's just a word. And any word can have different meanings to different people, right? So for one person, the desire to be enlightened could literally just mean, I want to be egoless, I want to be empty. And that becomes then a reasonable even practice, because then you become enlightened in each moment. In each moment, you're paying attention, you're being aware, you're letting go of ego, you're becoming empty, you're being moved. In that way, the desire to be enlightened is a practice, and it's very useful. But what often happens when people say they want to be enlightened is they get some idea in their mind. They have a concept of what enlightened is. You know, for some people, it might be that certain look in the eye. I want to have that look in my eyes when I look at people. I want them to see my eyes looking like that. You know, for some people, it might be, you know, who, I don't even want to make up all the possibilities of what enlightened might be, but people have these imaginary concepts that they call enlightened, and that becomes their goal. And they don't understand that they're craving some type of form, experience, and calling it enlightenment. And what happens if you crave some type of a form, experience enough, is, you know, you could call it through the power of the law of attraction, if you like. You will then attract that experience to yourself, and you can believe that you are enlightened when you are not. So it's really important to make sure that whatever you are desiring on the spiritual path, to make sure that your desire is really well-placed, well-thought-out. In fact, the funny thing is, some of you may be aware that I'm doing short audios every morning. I started this just shortly before New Year's, and I post them. And this is exactly what this morning's short audio was about. I was using an Adya Shanti book as a guide in the audio. He called it an aspiration, a spiritual aspiration. I tend to call it a desire. But the recommendation that was coming forth from both of us is to seriously consider what that desire is. And in fact, if you go and read Adya Shanti's book, he'll say exactly what I'm saying, that whatever your desire is, it's going to manifest. You will manifest that desire, that aspiration. So you want to be careful and thoughtful in selecting your desire. If your desire is for some concept that you are calling enlightenment, even if it's some spiritual experience, you know, like always being able to know yourself as, you know, you want to be able to look at a tree and become the tree. You want to be able to look at a dog and become the dog. You know, you want to be able to look at the sun and become the sun. That's not the same thing as wanting to be empty, as wanting to know only truth, whatever it is, right? You have a specific idea of what enlightenment is, and you're craving that specific idea. And you can manifest for yourself that experience. And then you can believe for yourself that you are enlightened. And it's just another facade. Again, your wisdom is still there. Your wisdom is your reality. Your truth is your reality. But once again, it's hidden by another mask. So consider carefully what your spiritual aspiration or what your spiritual desire is. Make sure it's the one that your heart is confirming, not the mind, because the mind will confirm an aspiration or desire that is actually false. Make sure it's the one that is confirmed by your heart. And when your heart gives approval, then keep that in mind as your desire or your aspiration. All right, so we are ready for number 457. Reading from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Again, this is coming from the Supreme Yoga originally. When one is fully established in the self, then this world appearance ceases like a dream during deep sleep. And of course, what he's referring to, you know, if you have a dream and then you go into deep sleep, in deep sleep there is no dream, right? The dream ends. That just doesn't exist there. To say it ends isn't even completely correct. It doesn't exist there. There is no dream in deep sleep. When one is fully established in the self, then this world appearance ceases like a dream during deep sleep. All right, let's look at 457 in the journal. And it looks like the contemplation of this quote led to another inquiry arising. And it looks like when I read this quote, which was May 18th, I experienced some type of a fear during the contemplation. Because when the inquiry arose, it's addressing the fear. There is a fear present. What is the fear? It is uneasiness at not being definite. Local and definite are synonymous in this fear. Non-local means not definite, which seems to mean not existing. This is how the fear sees it. Now again, it was just a day or two before this. I think it might have been around May 16th when I had the experience under the tree. And as I mentioned to you, in that experience, there was no I, there was no thought of I, it simply didn't exist. But what happened, of course, is the experience was temporary. And so 2 days later, when I'm contemplating this quote that talks about, when one is fully established in the self, then this world appearance ceases like a dream during deep sleep. The memory of that experience kind of kicked in with the ego intact in a fearful way. And the fearful way that it kicked in was kind of like saying, almost like it didn't have words to it, but I'm going to make up words to kind of paint the picture. It was almost like the fear was saying, well, if I can't be a person, at least I want to be a tree, or I want to be a leaf, or I want to be the wind. I want to know myself as something. I can't be nothing. That's kind of what the fear was saying. It didn't have those words, but that would be the feeling of it. If I'm not something, if I'm not, if I'm a cup, that's fine. I'm a cup. You all know I've also had an experience of being an apple. If I'm a cup, that's great. I'm a cup. If I'm an apple, I'm an apple. If I'm a leaf, I'm a leaf. But if I'm none of that, I'm nothing. And nothing was being seen as I don't exist, which is actually not true, because in the experience, obviously there was existence there. There was nothing that could say, I exist in that experience, but there was existence. So this idea that I have to be something instead of in order to exist is an untrue idea. But it's how it was coming up for me during this contemplation. So again, 457 says, there is a fear present. What is the fear? It is uneasiness at not being definite. Local and definite are synonymous in this fear. Non-local means not definite, which seems to mean not existing. This is how the fear sees it. And one thing that's really interesting about the way this answer is being written is that the fear is being observed. I am not talking from the fear. What's happening is a fear arose, and I'm looking at the fear, and I'm describing for the inquiry, here's what the fear looks like. But I'm not actually even fully identified with the fear. You can tell that by the language. Notice I'm not saying I'm afraid of not existing. I'm just saying this is what the fear is. The inquiry then asked, so definite and existing are seen as synonymous, which means I have to be something in order to exist. And I said, yes. And then the inquiry said, this would mean the chair exists. Of course, there was a chair next to me, which I looked at when this came up. The chair exists. The dog exists. And I looked at Jamie, my dog. Everything seen exists because it is definite. And I confirmed, yes, that is how the fear sees it. And then the inquiry came back and said, the chair does not exist. The dog does not exist. Everything seen only seems to exist because of the I am this thought. I am this projects. And seeing shows belief. Without I am this, there is no projection. Now, this was actually an interesting experience for me because there's a fear happening, right? A fear about not being definite. And the way the inquiry addressed the fear was not in a traditional comforting way. It was in a very direct way. It said, so you think that the chair exists and the dog exists and everything you see exists because it's definite? And I said, yes. It said, but they don't exist. The chair does not exist. The dog does not exist. And you would almost think that that would cause the fear to become inflated. The funny thing was, it didn't. The funny thing was, even though this was not traditionally comforting language, it was extremely comforting. And the reason it was comforting is because, again, this wisdom was arising within me. And as the wisdom arose within me, the clarity, the seeing happened. It wasn't as if I was listening to an other who was telling me, you know, everything you see does not exist. I'm saying, oh my God, you know. This was me. I mean, this was, the realizing was happening. And it was entirely comforting to be with the foundation of such consistent wisdom. It wasn't a wisdom that tried to comfort me in a way that would be satisfying to a human, but yet not the wisdom. You know, saying something that was not like what the wisdom usually says. It was the wisdom being itself. It was the wisdom being a very solid foundation. It was the wisdom being a rock. And knowing that that rock was ever present was comforting. Now, if you're in 457 with me, you can scroll underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 458. Oh, and I just came back. I have to kind of leave you guys in order to go read the journal because it's in a different window. I just came back and I saw that Open Flower has written, "Sitting on the fence is painful." Jim Morrison said something like that, referring to straddling the fence. And yeah, Dove quotes that in the room sometimes, so I've seen that before. But I think that that idea, sitting on the fence is painful, helps to explain why when the wisdom stayed, the wisdom stayed very firm in saying, but the chair does not exist, the dog does not exist, why that was comforting, because there was no sitting on the fence, right? It was very solid and it was very comforting. All right, so now we're moving on to 458, and first I will read from the Seven Steps to Awakening. As surely as it is a certainty that where there is sunlight, there is illumination. Where there is experience of the essencelessness of the worldly objects, there occurs spiritual awakening. I'll read that one more time. This originally comes from the Supreme Yoga, Yoga Vasistha. As surely as it is a certainty that where there is sunlight, there is illumination. Where there is experience of the essencelessness of the worldly objects, there occurs spiritual awakening. All right, so now we'll look at 458, at what I wrote after contemplating this. I feel surrender. Surrender to the teaching that the world I see is not real. I feel this surrender because the inner wisdom that presents this teaching is flawless. It doesn't matter how much this mind forgets the teaching or how confused this mind gets on this point. As soon as the mind is quiet and listening, the wisdom is sharp and crystal clear. This wisdom is not mind-made. It is beyond mind, and for this reason, I surrender to it. So, of course, this journal entry would not only be in response to contemplating this quote, 458, but would also be in response to the comfort I felt in 457, when the wisdom did not waver, even though fear was present, when the wisdom remained itself. If the wisdom was made up, if because we read spiritual books and we fill our mind with all of this teaching, and so therefore we can kind of regurgitate it sometimes, right? If that's all the wisdom was this regurgitation, the wisdom would not be as solidly consistent as it is. Sometimes when we're in fear, for example, the wisdom may comfort us in a way that a human desires to be comforted because we seek the comforting so much in that moment. Sometimes when we've completely forgotten the clarity of yesterday there, and we sit down again, the wisdom may appear to be completely different than yesterday. I mean, heck, we forgot what it said yesterday, so why should it be the same today? It would just kind of be what I would call the mood of the day. We would not find consistency in our wisdom if our wisdom was not real. If our wisdom was merely the regurgitation of all the spiritual books that we've listened to and all of the spiritual teaching that we've listened to, there would be an inconsistency in our wisdom, which over time, if we wanted to look at our wisdom with honesty, would be apparent. But the fact that the false self, the seeming I, shifts and changes, it has, you know, what appears to be good days and bad days, days of fear, days of clarity, days of confusion, days of complete forgetfulness, days of resistance, you know, and yet the wisdom never wavers when we sit down and turn our attention to it. That is evidence that the wisdom is real. That which is shifting and changing the person, that which seems clear one day and confused the next, willing one day and resistant the next, that's the unreal one. The one that is highly consistent, like a rock, is the reality. And so that clarity was very apparent in this moment. After having witnessed an unflinching wisdom. If the person self is unreal and the wisdom is real, why try and hold on to the person self? Why not surrender into the wisdom that I am? So again, Yoga Vasistha said, as surely as it is a certainty that where there is sunlight, there is illumination, where there is experience of the essencelessness of the worldly objects, there occurs spiritual awakening. A moment ago, a quote ago, a statement similar to that, one that talked about the world appearance ceasing, seemed to cause a fear. But now, a moment later, after having experienced the highly consistent nature of wisdom, the same type of quote results in a complete surrender. Instead of a fear. I feel this surrender because the inner wisdom that presents this teaching is flawless. It doesn't matter how much this mind forgets the teaching or how confused this mind gets on this point. As soon as the mind is quiet and listening, the wisdom is sharp and crystal clear. This wisdom is not mind-made. It is beyond mind. And for this reason, I surrender to it. That is the false surrendering to the true. If you're in 458 with me, you can scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 459. And I will read 459 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. The world appearance arises in ignorance, and wisdom puts an end to it. The world appearance arises in ignorance, and wisdom puts an end to it. All right, let's read the journal entry. This is the same day, so you can kind of get a feel for the type of experience I was having on this day in my chair. I agree to continue listening to wisdom, even though I realize it will put an end to this local self I think I am, and this world appearance that I believe is real. I accept there may be resistance. And I give resistance permission to make itself known. But I shall react only by watching with non-attachment as I continue to follow the call of wisdom. So two quotes ago, I experienced a fear. One quote later, surrender. And one quote later, commitment. Honest commitment. I mean, this is a commitment that says, I know that there will be times of resistance. But I choose, even in times of resistance, to listen to wisdom. This is very much like, you know, like the Indian idea of surrendering at the feet of the guru. And that no matter what the guru asks me to do, I will do. The only difference here is we're not dealing with two bodies. We're not dealing with any idea of other whatsoever. There's not even the idea of an inner teacher. There is just wisdom. Wisdom that arises when attention is given to it. And then there is saying, as long as there appears to be wisdom and ignorance, I always surrender to the wisdom, which is a step toward abiding as wisdom. I agree to continue listening to wisdom, even though I realize it will put an end to this local self I think I am, and this world appearance that I believe is real. I accept there may be resistance, and I give resistance permission to make itself known. Notice there's no desire for denial here. But I shall react only by watching with non-attachment, just as I watched the fear 2 quotes ago, as I continue to follow the call of wisdom. It's a commitment. And there's only 4 minutes left on the clock, so I'm not going to go to 4:60. Normally what I would do at this point is I would play a song, but because I'm on the phone and then going, you know, from a phone to a microphone, there may be some type of distortion that just doesn't make it worth it. So I think what I'm going to do instead is just let go of the mic early. JM's already in the room. Of course, Dove is going to take the mic immediately, but there's just no reason for me to hang around and try to use up the additional few minutes. So that's it for me. I'm going to mentally let go of the mic. And thank you, everyone. And Dove, do you want me to hang up or stay on the phone? I don't know if Dove's there. He may have stepped away for a moment, so maybe that's a reason for me to keep talking. He may not even be there.
Hi.
Oh, there he is.
I'm here. I was sitting over at Happy Learner. I was having a good time listening to you. Okay, I think I do have the mic right now.
Yes.
So, okay, you can hang up. Thank you so much, Regina Doan Acres, and whether we were able to put it all together here in this past hour. And I hope that you have a recording. I think I do have a recording.
I do have it recorded, and I will give you a call tomorrow.
Very good.
And I am...
does that recording. I'll talk to you tomorrow, Regina.
All right.
Thank you so much.
All right, I love you. Bye.